I was born in a small town called Masjid Suleiman in southern Iran.
I was born in Syria.
I was born in Hamburg, Germany.
I was born in Korea.
I was born in Tanzania in a refugee camp.
I was born in Singapore.
Guatemala. I'm from Ireland.
I was born in Thailand, refugee
camp. I was born in Mumbai.
I was born in Vientiane, Laos.
I was born in England.
I was born in Costa Rica.
Welcome to Many Roads to Here, bringing the voices of immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers to a national conversation about migration and identity. I'm your host, Aman Al-Hal. Today's story reflects the journey of an undocumented immigrant. To protect his identity, we are not using his full name. For the purpose of this story, we will call him Jose. Jose was just 5 months old when his parents smuggled him across the U.S.-Mexico border. Drawn by the promise of opportunity and stability, they came chasing the American dream. But more than 20 years later, that dream has caused him more challenges than prosperity.
I wish I would have stayed in Mexico. Everything that surrounds me in my life, in my world, it's always been a setback.
At 23, Jose remains undocumented, entering adulthood without a clear path forward. This is his story thus far.
I could argue that my grandma's tamales are better than anyone. The rule in my grandma's house is that we're not allowed to go outside and play until we eat. And so I love that rule. I grew up being a very chubby kid, and so I loved sitting down and eating. And then just burning those calories, going outside and just running around the park.
Sundays after church at his grandmother's trailer park home. That's what Jose remembers most fondly about growing up.
Hours and hours of my grandma cooking makes the inside just insulated with hot tamale, warmth. By the time we'd go home in the van, everybody would just be drenched in that smell of tomatoes, and it was the greatest smell ever.
It was a time in his life when Jose felt he never had anything to worry about.
There was a point in my life where I was very, very happy and not scared of anything like that. Being a kid and not having any thought about anything that's going on in the world, and just waiting every week until it was Sunday to go see your family, to go eat some really good tamales, and spending some just quality time, and honestly seeing my parents. Sundays were the best days of my life because I got to see my parents. I haven't reflected on that in a long time because we actually don't have that anymore.
Though that sense of security that once engulfed Jose as a child was truly never his to carry. What he felt was a facade brought on by his adolescence, but one that soon fell to pieces once he caught on to how and where his life started.
I knew that I was undocumented, but I didn't know what it meant. I came to the U.S. when I was 5 months old. And what I've been told about that process was that I had an easier time crossing the border than the rest of my family that came with me. And they had to cross through the desert. It was a very hard time for them, to the point where they don't really tell me details or anything. They do get flashbacks about it when we watch a movie, when anything, not even if it has any relation to immigration or crossing, anything that has relation to crossing a desert, they start to think about it, and they just feel uncomfortable. So I know that was a very hard time for them. But I crossed with someone else. The someone else is a coyote, and so that process is when you pay to get crossed over. My parents pretty much gave me to a random person, and were just trusting the process and trusting that they paid everything in full and on time. But at the same time, my parents also had the stress of there was a specific time and place to meet, and if they wouldn't meet there, what would happen to me? So they were eager on crossing. There was no turning back. There was no slowing down, no resting or anything. They were just on the one plan was to, meet at this place at this time, because that's when they're going to see me and that's where I would be. It's they wouldn't ever want to imagine losing their kid, especially through a hard process like that. So I've heard stories and read about stories of parents who are on their way to meet their kid who crosses a coyote, and they get caught and their kid is nowhere to be found, and they have to spend a lot of money, a lot of time on effort to find that kid years after. Sometimes they don't even aren't able to get their child after. And so my mom always tells a heartbreaking story for her that she wasn't able to breastfeed me. I was 5 months. After those 3 days of not being with her, she said that I wasn't able to, like, I wasn't breastfed anymore, that somehow I just wasn't attached at that point. And so she said that that was a very heartbreaking moment for her, that those 3 days of not being with me, like, affected that much.
While Jose was too young to remember or comprehend what was happening, he heard these stories later in life from his parents, who also shared with him why they took the risk.
It's a weirdly sad story that when they tell me, they had just, like, gotten married, and then just had me, and then they had, like, a really, my dad worked in a hotel in Mexico, and he enjoyed that job a lot. He said that he got paid really well in tips, and he was a really nice job to have. And my mom was finishing her nursing degree in Mexico as well, in the same area. And so they, like, it sounds like a nice fairy tale. Like, they just had gotten an apartment. My dad had a full-time job. My mom was a full-time student, but I was being taken care of well. So it was just, everything was sounding nice. Until they started thinking of, like, hey, you know what, like, what would happen, like, what would happen to me? Like, what would I grow up in? They imagined that I would have still gone to school, but I wouldn't have gone to a really good school, or I would have had a really good degree, or I wouldn't have had a really good job. And so they know that with family that we have here in the U.S., they say, like, okay, like they knew that life was going to be hard and that everything else was, there were going to be challenges for me. But if I played my cards right, like, I would have a really great opportunity than if I would over there. And not a lot of people complain about life in Mexico. Life in Mexico is really great. It's just that if you have a really nice life, you can't really think that your kids are going to have the same life. The way my dad explains it to me is that, like, he got used to living in poverty to the point where it wasn't really poverty for them. But he knows that I wouldn't have seen it that way, or anyone else wouldn't have seen it that way. And so they know, like, okay, growing up in poverty in the U.S. is not the same as growing up in poverty in Mexico. So, yeah, they all had the same idea of, like, okay, like, we're happy here, but what about our kids? What about our family? Like, we're going to be poor in the U.S. or be poor in Mexico.
Jose's parents felt that even though they would be living in poverty no matter where they were, at least in the U.S., their kids would have opportunities that they didn't.
I would say kindergarten was probably one of my earliest memories, only because I remember other kids, like, crying and being, like, scared of leaving their family, and I did not know where I was going or anything. Like, my parents didn't have no explanation of what school was, and so I just remember my parents just taking me to a place and left me there for a couple hours, and I came back, but it was fun.
While for most kids, school is something to dread, for Jose, it was exciting.
I've always had a really good time in school, and I know knowing what school is meant for, like, it's always been a easy place for me to go.
That was until his classmates started catching on to who exactly he was.
I got made fun of in elementary school, actually, for being undocumented, which I was so confused. I don't know how these people knew that I was undocumented, but I didn't care when it was happening because I didn't know what it meant to be undocumented. I just knew that I was born in Mexico and I have a scar on my right shoulder, and so I didn't know that is what made me different, having a scar. But yeah, I remember I got made fun of. I was called Beaner a lot growing up. They were also Mexican, and I don't know, but I would imagine that their parents were also immigrants, so I found that being very, very strange. They'd call me that. They'd call me alien. I was in fourth grade when that happened. There's me and another kid. He was, I think his parents were undocumented, and they were making fun of the other kid for having undocumented parents, and I thought that was very, very strange. And then they would turn on me and also, like, make fun of me for being undocumented. And although, like, them making fun of me for that wasn't what hurt me, it was more of, like, knowing I knew that I was undocumented, I just didn't know that it was something to be negative. It could be something negative. And so that feeling of, like, oh, like,
Jose was the kind of kid who felt a lot of things very deeply, especially worry. So when the playground got tough, it made his world feel even bigger and scarier. And soon, a trip back to Mexico was going to show him just how big that world really was.
My mom wanted me and my little brother to meet my grandparents because we hadn't met them yet. My grandparents saw me when I was 5 months old, so they don't know how we look like. We were going to go to Mexico. My mom told us that we were going to go to Mexico for 2 weeks. And we were like, okay, why don't we go in the summer? And they said, no, like, the summer, like, it's a lot of people go in the summer. It would have been very hard. And I thought that was very confusing why. So we ended up going in September. So I started school here. I started my fourth grade for like 2 weeks, and then I got taken out to go to Mexico. We drove down to Mexico and had stayed there for 6 months. And so I stayed there without my dad. 6 months without my dad was the hardest time. It was, my mom was also very young. I think she was in her early 30s. I think she was 30 or 31 when that happened. So for her, it must have been very hard too, because her husband wasn't there. It was just a different time, different change. But me and my younger brother did not have a good time when we went. We were kids. So like any other kid, you wouldn't want to relocate for 6 months, not knowing that you, we thought we were only going to stay for 2 weeks. We stayed there for 6 months. And yeah, it was just a different environment. I didn't know what I was getting into. So my mom, she knew something that we didn't. My grandma was dying. She was 54, 53 at the time. She had a very complicated heart problem. So my mom knew that she was like, if she didn't go soon, she was going to die. And so we went, and my grandma actually got better when we went. The doctors were saying that she actually had a goodwill to live now. Like, her health was kind of changing for the better, or it was just stagnant. Like, it wasn't getting worse the way it was before. I think we could have stayed longer, but my mom was like, okay, like, I think it's time for us to go back. Like, it's been 6 months. And so, yeah, when we came back, and then, yeah, my grandma died shortly after, as soon as we came back.
But it wasn't until Jose was back in the U.S. that his family realized how big of a mistake they had made by staying in Mexico for so long.
There's two reasons why I'm not allowed to get DACA, wasn't able to get DACA. There were some new additions added to DACA that are required before you can apply. One was you weren't allowed to leave the U.S. for over 3 months at a time, I think. And I had left for 6 months. And then two was that you'd have to be in the U.S. before 2012. And I came back in the U.S., I think, March of 2012. And that's what took me off. We were going to apply. I got a lawyer, and then it didn't. They pretty much said, there's no way that you're going to get it. And I was like, okay. So I was a kid when that happened. And then we tried again, I think, when I was like 12, 13, and same thing. So they said, no, rules haven't changed. You would not get it. And I was like, okay. There's other rumors that DACA was going to change. The rules were going to change, and I would be eligible. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I'll stay in high school, stay in middle school. I'll do this until I'm eligible. And then I'll work as soon as I'll get DACA, get a work permit. And then I'll go to work as soon as I graduate. And then no, the opposite actually happened. I think DACA got taken or paused multiple times.
Back in the U.S., Jose started to piece things together. As he got older, so did his frustrations. He realized that had his family come back from Mexico within the planned 2-week time frame, he wouldn't be faced with a perpetual sense of fear over an arbitrary paperwork deadline.
She regrets it every day. I met my grandma, and I love her, and she loved me. I met my grandpa. I love him. He loves me. Knowing them, if they knew that I don't have papers because I went to go visit them, they would hate my parent. They would hate my mom and my dad. They would never want me to go through that. And my grandma, who died, unfortunately, she would never. I know her. Knowing her, she would have rather died not ever seeing me again than have me go through what I'm going through now.
Without papers, a lot of doors were already closed before Jose even knew they existed. But life didn't stop, and neither did he.
Always worked. I always worked construction, always worked landscape, always worked in farming. I worked, I think when I was 16, I always picked berries, but when I was 16, I didn't. That summer, I did something called acero, or at least is what they were told me. And it's pretty much you get a garden hoe and you take out the weeds in the plants. And although it sounds easy, you just go and take it out, it was the worst summer of my life. It sucked. I was mistreated by the workers. I was mistreated by my boss. And I'd have to wake up at 4 every day, come back home at 4. And it was just very hard. And that on a 16-year-old mind was very hard. And I knew that anything I do, I would never do that again. I would take any opportunity to not do that again. And so then I still continued to work with my dad, and I still had the same mentality of okay, I'm gonna help him and everything. But I knew in the back of my mind, I still had that I will always take the opportunity that doesn't allow me to work those jobs that I never liked.
After the long, exhausting days, Jose made himself a promise that he would give school everything he had. But no matter how hard he worked, the issue of his legal status was always there, like a shadow he couldn't shake.
Tried to graduate early, took extra classes because I wanted to start work with my dad. And then that's when my counselor were like, oh, like you should try looking into taking college courses. And I knew that college would like help, but it wasn't something that I let myself think about a lot. But again, I thought, okay, like any opportunity to not do the jobs that I don't like to do. And I was like, okay, like it's community college. It does work around my schedule kind of. And I had the option of taking them online. So I did that. And I never thought of it being hard. And I think that's what like not ever thinking of that was what helped a lot. Around that same time, COVID happened. I was actually very lucky to the point where like when COVID happened, if you had started the term, you automatically pass if you had a passing grade. And so I passed the class, got the credits. And I was like, oh, okay, I got a good amount of credits. I only have a year left of community college and then I get my associates. Or I can just go straight to undergrad.
During his college application experience, Jose found acceptance easy, but faced challenges when it came to his lack of documentation.
But it was the tuition equity bill, which meant that before the tuition equity bill, students who were undocumented and seek college, they were able to go to college, at least in Oregon, which is sanctuary state, but they would have to pay, like, they're not a U.S. resident. They would have to pay like not resident tuition. And that is so much money. And those who are undocumented do not receive any federal loans, any loans, any scholarships or nothing. The amount that you see on paper is the amount that you would have had to pay. And that was like, seeing those the amount now is like, that's a lot. And I was like, wow, that is way too much. I could never do that. But with that tuition equity bill, those who are undocumented and lived in that state, or at least here in Oregon for, I think it was 6 months prior, were able to get tuition equity as those who were residents of the state. I had lived in Oregon since I was 5 months. I went through high school and elementary, middle school here. So I was like, oh, this bill was meant for me. I knew that I was good for school. I knew that I would have had to not work with my dad, which again, that was like all I wanted to do. I was a kid, I was 16, 17, and I thought that was my life goal. And like, I'm like, okay, my whole life I'm gonna devote to helping my dad. So when that opportunity happened, I saw it as an opportunity, but I knew that I was gonna have to let go of something, which was my life goal of helping my dad. But it being an opportunity, I took it, was right away. So no one else in my family has gone to college. No one else, none of my friends were gonna go. It was just, okay, I knew that I was gonna be on my own, and so. It was a lot of bitter, but I knew that it was an opportunity. I'm a very opportunity-based person. Like, I wasn't going to say no to that.
With the tuition equity bill and Oregon's aid application, Jose qualified for in-state tuition and state grants. But as an undocumented student, he still couldn't take out loans to cover the rest.
I still worked full-time with him for the first year, for the first 2 years, actually. And it was very hard. Yeah, it was very hard having to work around his schedule and my schedule. It was a terrible couple months of waking up at 5:30, working with my dad from 6 to 12, going home to shower and starting class at 1 and finishing at like 5. And then there was a point where I had another job as well, and I'd start that at like 5:30 and end at 10:30. And it was at a restaurant. I did that for a couple of months until I got an extra scholarship that would allow me to not have to do that again.
After pursuing an undergraduate degree in sociology and economics, Jose thought the idea of pursuing a career in social work would be fulfilling. But his lack of documentation continued to act as another barrier.
I knew that, like, at least being an undergrad, that gives me 4 years of being in the U.S. If anything happens, I have 4 years at least. It's not that they as in, like, ICE or the state would, like, kick me out. But I knew, like, why would they go through a lot of trouble of deporting someone who's a student? You know, like that wouldn't make sense. So I saw it as more as okay, this is my ticket of being here for another 4 years until I figure out what my life is. And I also had the illusion that I was going to have citizenship by the end. In my mind, I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to get citizenship as soon as I graduate. Like, I'll be in favor. I'll be first in line because I'm going to get a degree. And no, not, that was not how the world works at all. Graduated undergrad a term early. I had a job lined up as an accountant, as a tax preparer. It unfortunately fell through. It wasn't something I was comfortable doing. Under the table situation, I would have gotten paid really low. If I go to school, it gives me more years to be here in the U.S. and to figure out what I can do and not do.
Now working to receive his master's in business administration, not because he necessarily wanted it or needed it, but because Jose felt it could act as a safety net or maybe even a guarantee.
Well, the guarantee is that I have no criminal record. I don't partake in alcohol or like drugs. I just know that like if I get like deported, I want to make sure that the picture is right. Like, hey, this person came to the U.S., did everything they needed to do, and they still got to go. Like, I want to make sure that there isn't nothing that I did wrong to not make it here. Like, if I get sent to Mexico, all right, go to Mexico. I want to make sure that, like, I did everything I needed to do on my part. I did not fail. I do know that I wouldn't want that to be the excuse if I ever get deported.
But with growing tensions in the U.S. surrounding immigration, Jose wonders if he'll even be able to stay in the only place he's ever known.
We banned TV in my house because of what's been happening. We're not allowed to look at the news or anything because it just creates fear. We're trying to expose ourselves not a lot to what's been happening around. It sucks, to be honest. It feels like I'm getting a bad picture painted of me. When Trump first got elected, it was like, okay, I'm getting a bad picture painted of me being undocumented. I'm being labeled as a criminal. But now it's like, it's the same thing, but now I have a target. Although being in a sanctuary state gives me like a little bit of peace, it doesn't change the fact that there's a lot of white people who don't like me and don't know me. And it doesn't change the fact that there's a lot of white people who are going out of their way to like and put undocumented people in danger. And that's like, that's very scary to think. I can't trust anyone. I can't talk to anyone because they're not going to like me just because I'm not from here. It happens a lot when I speak Spanish. It makes people uncomfortable. And I think it's been times where people are like, oh, let's leave because there's a beaner here. Or like, oh, like let's leave because they're probably going to do something. And it's just like, okay, like it's not that it bothers me. Like it makes me feel bad, but it does make me feel a certain like, oh, like they go out of their way to feel this way when it's just nonsense. People have shouted and said things and people like it happens often where I'm like, if I'm near people, not even trying to be on purpose, they get out of their way to leave because I'm on the phone or because I'm just speaking Spanish. Right now, more than ever, you can't really speak Spanish to another person as well because the other person feels uncomfortable as well. A lot of undocumented or not even undocumented, like a lot of Mexicans are feeling very scared as well. Even though they're like a lot of them are citizens and a lot of them were born here for many years, a lot of families are like scared as they should be. Like it's not a good time to be Mexican right now or Hispanic or undocumented, and that's just what they're targeting. And so it's a lot of people are very scared. At any moment I could get picked up, but if I get deported, like I go back to Mexico with a degree. Like I go back to Mexico with at least something, you know, to show that I did my time well and I showed up well. I'm more scared that I am labeled as a criminal. I know that if I'm labeled as an undocumented immigrant, like, okay, like that means I'm just born somewhere else. But being labeled as a criminal means something else. I get like you'll be treated differently anywhere else you go. And so that was where the fear a lot came from. Like being called a criminal.
That fear of being seen as a criminal is only made worse by the words Jose hears all too often, people telling him to go back to where he came from. For him, those words erase everything he's built here and everyone he loves.
I hear that all the time. My whole life is here. I have a younger brother who's 11. He's my whole world. I love him. And I know that the second I leave, I won't see him for a while. It is actually a thought in the future, actually, to leave. I don't know if Mexico, but maybe. I know that, at least with the current political state, like, if I don't leave, I will probably be forced to leave. And so I think I'd rather make that choice myself. But I think the only reason I'm not thinking too much of it is because of my younger brother. I know he'd see me in his vacations, but he is my, like, whole world. I wouldn't be able to live, like, if I don't see him. I see him every day. And second to that would be my parents. I love my parents. I love my parents, but unfortunately, they're immigrants as well. And so I know that there's a lot of things that I have advantage over them when it comes to me being raised in the U.S. at 5 months. I know a lot when it comes to laws, when it comes to taxes, credit, everything that there is to need to like survive here. I know everything for it. And so I'm a very good asset for my parents, and I would be very upset if they're ever in need of me and they don't have me. Like, that's my biggest fear. I also have a girlfriend of 3 years here. I'd be missing a lot if I leave. But I do know that it is something that might happen in the future.
For Jose, the American dream has always been a contradiction. It's the reason his parents risked everything, and yet it's the very thing that remains out of reach. But he's not the only one.
Right now, everyone's scared. Everyone's really scared. I'm very scared. There's nothing positive happening for us, for immigrants, for undocumented people. Nothing's going on that's like shows like, okay, like this is worth it. But if they could hear like, okay, like this is a kid born in Mexico, grew up here in the U.S., went to college, got a high school diploma, got a college degree, going to get his master's. That's some good news that at least helps some people. It'd be very sad to know that if there's people who are more smarter than me and more promising than me who refuse to go to college because they're very scared right now. It's very hard to navigate high school and navigate college while being undocumented and not having anyone to like help me or have any guidance. And so I know I wish I could go, like, if I wish I could put myself out there and be like, hey, my name is this. I'm gonna, like, I can help you step by step. And unfortunately, I can't right now. I just hope at least they can, like, know that someone else did what they want to do and they should definitely do it. There's no, like, no other stories with it. Like, I can't go on the news. People are not talking. People are scared. And also, there's not a lot of people who are undocumented and going to school. A lot of people who are undocumented refuse to go to school because of the problems in it. I want to say that it was very hard, but I did it. If there's someone who doesn't, who's scared and is undocumented and they're like, hey, like they're going to go through a lot, want to tell them that it is going to be a lot, but it happened. Like I did it, and it's something that people should definitely start doing. Because I know because when I wanted to go to school or like when I was going to college, there was no help. There was no one that I could seek the guidance who was undocumented like me. And those who I met who ended up being undocumented, they weren't helpful, but not because they didn't want to. It's just because like there's the fear of when you're undocumented, you live in constant fear. It's just something that made them uncomfortable. And that's fine. That's their choice. How they feel is how they feel. But I just don't want someone who's undocumented to think that it's a problem to be undocumented.
Jose's story is one of loss and longing, but also of quiet resilience. He represents the thousands of young people in this country who grew up American in every way, but not on paper, still waiting for a door that may never open. Many Roads to Here is a production of The Immigrant Story. This episode was produced, edited, and hosted by me, Amal Al-Halb. Special thanks to Jenna Woodring for editorial support and to Greg Palmer for post-production support. This interview was conducted by myself and our executive producer, Senkar Rahman. Thank you to St. Andrew Lutheran Church in Beaverton, Oregon for letting us use their space to record this interview. This episode is made possible by the generous support by the Marie Lam Frum Charitable Foundation. To find more stories, visit The Immigrant Story website, listen live at prp.fm, or stream us wherever you get your podcasts.